This is Marcy Schuler with 307 Net Radio, and we're here this morning with Charles Oskey for our weekly meeting, the Superintendent of Schools at Johnson County School District Number 1. How are you today?
Good. Good morning.
Good.
Where did the week go?
I know. Here it is.
Yep.
Well, you had a short week this week. You started with Monday as a holiday for students, and did the staff have a holiday as well?
No. Actually, we had some great professional development going on that day. So I want to just kind of extend what took place. A lot of great feedback, but we started out with, again, an extension of our community safety task force. We're working with local law enforcement, so we had local DCI come in and do a presentation about what drugs and what to look for. Illegal drugs are actually in our community, and you know what they're seeing with the trends with kids and happening in our community. And I felt that was a very informative hour, and they asked a lot of great questions, and it was just really an eye opener. There are some scary things out there, and you know, having staff be aware of that, and what they're looking for, and understanding what things our kids are exposed to, was really beneficial.
So what are we seeing? What are the dangers, and should the community be aware?
Yeah, and you know, parents being involved, and that would be a great question at our task force. Maybe we need to have a community meeting to talk about that. But the one that stands out the most for me is fentanyl. That's really the new drug of choice, and it takes just a very it looks like some salts of grain that's not very much at all that can actually cause death. And so we as a district are being proactive. I want you to know our nurses. So Narcan is something that we changed our policy. We're going to look at doing that training actually Friday.
What's Narcan?
Narcan is basically a nasal spray that somebody that is you perceive or know that is having health issues due to the drug that you could administer safely to save their life. So that's a great question. Sorry, I just get talking. And more as we put this into place, this I think would be another great opportunity to get our district nurses involved and talk about how we are training our buildings and what the drug actually is and what Narcan can do to help. So we are going to have all this training in every building, including the district office where there's public meetings. So we are moving forward from that. So that's an extension of it, just making them realize that, hey, this stuff is here. It's really interesting. With this drug, it's 100 times more potent than morphine. And there's some very scary things. In addition to that, we're seeing a lot of things coming from the states that have legalized marijuana, anything from the gummy bears and all those different things that are being transported into Wyoming from other states. So it's just right now just realizing what is there, what's not there, how do you identify it. So I think it was an informative meeting. I think there's more questions that come out of that, but that was just an hour. And then we led into a gentleman that did a guest, did a presentation, and Josh is the presenter, but he did it to the High School Principals Association, and Lori and Jake came back just totally excited about what he had to offer. So Mr. Evans wrote a grant. We put him in the schedule, and he had a captive audience for 3 hours, and everybody was engaged about the aftermath of COVID and what we're seeing with what has happened with families. So we are seeing kids that are coming to school that are struggling emotionally, socially, you know, and how to deal with that and how to recognize those things and asking the hard questions. But it really paralleled with what we're trying to do. It's about building relationships. It's about getting to know your kids, giving them the tools to understand their feelings, and you know, things are tough at home, and it really parallels with why we're bringing in a parent liaison.
So I mean, our schools in Johnson County, we only missed a couple of months, but essentially had a longer summer, that first summer of 2020. Mm-hmm. So we're still seeing major effects from COVID, absolutely.
And especially with the social economy we have now. People are struggling. You know, the cost of living is going up. And there were some things there. Is the impact as great as it was back east where they were virtual for a long time? No. But I can say there were some definite correlations that what happened with COVID being virtual, you know, just that transition. And I've heard a couple comments. They don't like the word new normal, or some of those things. And I'm okay with that. But for me, the reality, education has changed. And we're still trying to find out. Now, were we brick and mortar? Absolutely. Are we trying to be in front of kids? Absolutely. However, we're a one-to-one technology. We've got a platform. Everything's being taught through that. The kids have that ability to work on everything through a Chromebook. So we, in education in general, we went away from everything just being strictly a traditional textbook type of scenario where everything is digital. Balancing where we went after COVID, and every district, including the ones in Wyoming, did a full swing to everything being on a platform, living in fear that, okay, we could be home for 2 weeks, for 6 months again. And so we balanced that, even in my first year here, is balancing, okay, when were the numbers going to be, at what point was the numbers high enough that we were going to pull the plug and teach home virtually? So those fears, which caused anxieties at home because parents still had to go to work. So there is, the side effects aren't as great as they were in other places, but there's still an impact here. And more importantly, teachers recognize that. And I'm going to take it to the next level. It's not only the kids, it's the teachers. They've got a lot going on in their lives. So, you know, balancing family, work, and the things that have to go in, because we've asked them to grow professionally and teach a new way in some cases. And that's been a huge push. So that traditional of, hey, let's take 2 or 3 years to implement something and train everybody to be effective with, let's be honest, it happened in probably a 2 to 3 week period of time. We forced people to go to a new teaching style.
So it sounds like there's specific challenges with education, with teachers, with families, with you know, the emotions. Are there other specific challenges that you were talking about that Josh brought to the district with this talk?
I think the big thing was the reality that teachers realized, wow, okay, we can learn from this. Now we can identify it. It's how we react to the scenario. He gave us an opportunity. Okay, take a deep breath. How do you handle a situation like this when a kid is struggling instead of just a reaction? So it's a how you handle those relationships piece, but professionally, when somebody is struggling, it's just not they're intentionally doing it. Is they're crying out to say, hey, I don't know how to handle my emotions right now. So it gave us some skill sets, and I have heard a lot of feedback. So my goal is for next year is to bring Josh back. And the theory that I've always had is kind of train the trainer. So maybe we can have some more people that are kind of trained in what he's seeing, which really does parallel to sources of strength. It parallels to what we're trying to do with that parent liaison, of giving parents the resources so they can feel successful and just kind of move forward with that. But it is a combination from my point of view in Buffalo. Yeah, we were in brick and mortar. We've been tried to be traditional, but our economy, the cost of living, and just a lot of things, everybody's struggling, right? And not to the extent of others, but it does impact the school.
So you've talked about partnering with parents. Are there other things going on in the district where you're encouraging, you know, more of a partnership with parents?
How exciting. Yes, we are. So one of our goals this year, if you look at our goal sheet, is to increase that parent communication at the schools. I know at the elementary, there's a group of parents that are trying to get a PTO up and being strong. And
what's a PTO?
Well, I'm just going to say it's a parent advocate group for a school. Getting parents involved is the simplest way to say it. Having that group of parents that wants to work with a school, knows what's going on, it forms that relationship. Because if there is one thing, and it's very evident here that COVID did, was it didn't allow parents to be actively involved because there was a fear. We couldn't do this, we couldn't do that, so we shut people out. Not intentionally. It was because we wanted to make sure schools were safe. However, we're coming back to where now we can come back to that and get parents engaged. And more importantly, when I say engaged, that communication piece, what is their view? What are their concerns? To actually know what's happening in the school. So I really encourage, I know both all the schools have a parent night, could be parent-teacher conferences. You know, the more people that we can get parents now into the school to meet with their teachers or to, be part of a committee that has a direct support or relationship with each individual school, we're only going to get stronger. So any listeners out there, if you receive a letter and there's for example, Cloud Peak had their parent meeting Tuesday night, great information. I mean, the goal would be to fill the gym the next time, you know, instead of just having with a handful of people, is the more people we can get. But I do understand that there's timing, some different things, but you know, if we can get these parent advisory groups to maybe be a resource for those parent or the parent liaison, which was there, we're really trying to make a full forth effort to get more information to parents or have parents the opportunity to understand.
That sounds really interesting. So we'll keep watching for that and maybe report on some of that as we go. So talk to me a little bit more about professional learning communities. I'm still a little curious about that.
Okay, so that was the second half of Monday's training. So it was a full day of training in Johnson County School District number 1. So we had that up through noon. We actually, and I'm going to put a little blurb in here for the transportation department. I had an opportunity to meet with the entire transportation department from 12 to 1 to hear their concerns as we kind of grow, and some growth came out of that. And then at 1 o'clock, we kicked off with professional learning community training as a leadership team. So all the building administrators, curriculum, special ed, talked about what we need to do as leaders to be an effective PLC district. And professional learning communities, and I'm going to go into that, but I also want the community to know teachers just didn't go to their classroom. They were looking at standards. They were having group conversations. They were looking where their students are at. So they had PD schedules for the afternoon, too, and expectations with professional development. What are we doing to use our time effectively? So that afternoon, administration was doing their training. Each individual school had staff expectations of what they were doing. So those are something. It was a full day. And now back to your original question, what is a professional learning community? A PLC is a group of teachers that get together depending on where you're at. I mean, there's singleton schools like at KC, small schools, but it's your departments, your grade levels, getting together, asking, what do we want our kids to learn? Where are they at? So you measure them. You asking those essential questions, and if they're not there, what are you going to do for interventions? So theoretically, the easiest way for me to say that is identifying the goal and then looking at the data to see if you're meeting your goals, and if you're not, what are we doing to get the kids where they need to be? So it's having that hard conversation. Is it, okay, did we miss this standard? Did we teach this standard appropriately? Maybe it's instruction within the classroom, which aligns again to the Danielson model that we're talking about. How can we become more effective with teaching in the classroom? Are students engaged? So it brings a lot of those things to the table of saying, okay, here's a group of kids, and it's not just about kids that aren't getting it. It's about kids that are excelling. What are we doing for the kids at the other end? How are we, the kids that have shown that they've mastered it, what can we do to challenge them? So it's looking at all the data that shows where our kids are, how do we move them forward? I guess that's more of a philosophy, too, is how do we continue to grow the kids from where they're at?
So the teachers are getting in groups and then discussing how to encourage and educate each individual student?
Yeah, individual students, grade levels. Okay, so hey, there's a blip in this. So looking, you know, everybody thinks we base this on just the state scores. The state score has a key, but that's a one-time snapshot. We have formative assessments. We have assessments every day in the elementary. gosh, I would encourage anybody to go down and sit down and talk with a K-5 teacher and talk about everything they are doing and what they do every week to identify if kids are growing, how we're adjusting. It is a very busy world. And then you get into the middle school and high school, and it's based on, okay, the math department, what are we seeing? Are they moving on the standards? And it can be very overwhelming with that piece. But there's definitely a difference between the way that elementary professional learning community is going to work and what's going to happen at a middle school and high school. However, it's not just simply based on the state assessment, because I think that, I'll just be professionally honest, I don't think our state assessment is a true snapshot of what our kids actually learn. It's everything that we do throughout the entire year and visiting it weekly, if not bi-weekly, with what we're doing with kids.
So, you mentioned the Danielson model. What is the Danielson model?
Great question, as Charles just gets rambling here. So, the Danielson model is what we talked about a little bit earlier, is changing our teacher evaluation system, which is the framework for teaching, which is the Danielson model, Charlotte Danielson, and changing it to a growth model. So, every state or every district in the state of Wyoming has to have a teacher evaluation model based on research. And so the one that this district chose, I think, back in 2013 was the Charlotte Danielson model. So the Danielson has come up with a new way of what quality teaching is. So we're one of the first districts, one of a few districts in the state of Wyoming that have already started the training with the new Danielson model. And we're trying to implement that. So this year we're introducing teachers to what the changes are with the Danielson model. And I want to change it from a teacher evaluation to a teacher growth model. So we're actually working on putting that documentation together with the understanding that and both a new principal's evaluation system or growth model will be officially implemented sometime next year.
Well, that makes sense. So you want to grow all of your employees. And if you grow your employees, you're going to grow students. Mm-hmm. So how long do you think it'll be before we actually see results in student growth from the professional learning community model that you're talking about?
Oh, I think we're going to start seeing it next year. I mean, we've already starting to see with Dr. Miller and the data that he's presenting for these individual groups. I mean, they're asking where are the kids at and then identifying where the target areas to be. I think it's brought a real focus to really realigning and making sure we're teaching teaching the standards that are going to be assessed. You always hear, well, we're teaching to the test. Well, there is an expectation, and I'll reference it as a game. There's a set of standards, priority standards, that we should teach to. That's why the state of Wyoming has a blueprint of what should be taught. And so when you see your scores, we really need to align. Are we teaching the proper standards for what the kids are going to be assessed on? And it's only fair for the kids, too. If we're not teaching what they're supposed to be assessed on, the kids aren't going to be successful. And then you have this picture that kids are not performing well or they're not going to be successful. And that's so false.
So who puts these standards together? Is it just some random group of people? Is it legislators? Is it educators?
So it's educators with input from stakeholders around the state of Wyoming. There's a process there, and actually they've just established that again, that every so many years you revisit the standards, you push them out. So it's a process that starts at the state level. Okay, it's overseen by the Wyoming Department of Education. They bring in educators, professionals from around the state. They ask parents, community members, stakeholders to be a part of that process. They'll review that. And, for example, like the science standards, we're pushing out those a new set of science standards because that came through the committee and where they're at. Our joint, it's not the Joint Education Committee. We always hear that with legislators. You brought in legislators. They kind of oversee and look at that, but I want to make it very clear, they don't drive the standards. That's something that's run through the Wyoming Department of Education and the State Board of Education that kind of drives what we do as standards. So legislators are always saying, hey, we need to do this, or maybe they say this needs to be taught, but how the standards are developed is a whole nother business.
Well, that's kind of encouraging to know. It's not just a political football.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about quite a few things today. A little bit about data for school improvement. We touched on that a little bit about school improvement, but
yeah. So the next work session.
Board work session
that we're going to actually talk about. Our state report cards are out. Schools that have been identified that are partially meeting, which would be Buffalo High School and Clear Creek, Cloud Peak Elementary. Will be presenting their plans of improvement that are required by the state. The board will review those at that work session. Then, by state statute, will adopt those or approve those in November. So that's coming up. The thing that's different this year with this is now accountability's back. COVID's over because we were all grandfathered and had an opportunity to say, "Hey, due to COVID." So this is that benchmark that people hear me talk about. And the reality is the process for plans of improvement is also changed. So we're all learning that process. It will be an expectation of mine as a superintendent that all schools will have a plan of improvement because it's really good. Look at where our students are. Our middle school was very high performing, but with that, Brandon does a great job. Dr. Ferris says, "Hey, we still have an opportunity for growth." So that's that transparency piece that we want to have with our community and parents is, "Hey, let's look, make sure we're doing everything correctly as we move forward." And that will be something we talk about at our work session in November, in addition to our facility review. So the work session is going to have a lot of information. I'm excited. It's going to be probably pretty lengthy in that. But, you know, not only what are we doing with kids to grow, what are we doing to maintain our facilities? So we've kind of wrapped up that evaluation of all our facilities, and we're going to start the next phase of how do we put a 5 to 10 year plan together.
So we've been doing, 307 Net Radio has been doing candidate forums and talking with school board candidates. And one of the things that has come up is I think that the idea is out there in the community that the school has not, the district has never had a plan for the buildings and upkeep. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so when I came in, there's a plan, but not a plan that's been developed through a set of engineers. So there's a process with that. So the plan was my goal was to come in, and what I realized is what we hadn't done is put something like this together and a plan that really says this is a component project. Because it takes anywhere from 2 to 3 years to go through that process with the state. So our big plans, there was nothing. Johnson County was not on the list for major component projects or HVAC projects. And I'm just going to use that as an example. The elementary right now, this HVAC project would have easily qualified for component funding. However, we're going to use major maintenance and some of our ESSER funds to do that. So that there is probably some confusion. Charles is not going to say that we didn't have a plan. There was a plan. However, under my leadership, the plan's going to look a lot different because I think we need to tap into resources like our component projects. But in order to do that, you have to have professionals evaluate your buildings. We currently don't have a plan for rotation of floors. What are we doing? When are we going to replace roofs? Roofs are coming at the end of their lifetime. So instead of being reactive, I want to be proactive with how we maintain our buildings because it's getting tighter. Major maintenance funds are getting harder to use under their qualifications. There's no funding for the building of schools. That has been kind of eliminated over the last couple of years. So I want to say you have to go to legislators to get that fund. So schools are getting built, but they're not getting built like they were 7 or 8 years ago, where the state was throwing hundreds, if not hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars and building schools around the state. That's kind of come to a halt.
So you mentioned a term that major maintenance. Explain what major maintenance is.
Great. These are good questions. So major maintenance, so in the state of Wyoming, we have our block funding model. So that's how we take care of some of the basic stuff. But in addition to that, the state's facilities commission and every district has a major maintenance budget that we receive from the state to maintain our buildings. But that has guidelines. You just can't spend it. So we'll receive like $1.2 million a year, and that is our money. But however, we have to have pre-approval to spend it. It's kind of a unique, it's a check and balance. Even though we have it, they have really strict guidelines on how that can be spent. So that's what drives most of our repairs or things break down. Does it qualify for major maintenance? If it doesn't qualify for major maintenance, all right, then we've got to either fund it out of our general fund or we've got to find a different way to fund a project that doesn't qualify for that. However, just a great example, our HVAC system is $750,000. If we just use major maintenance to take on big roofing projects or HVAC projects, that's going to deplete. So that means then we're going to not be able to keep the floors up or to replace something once it gets broke. So when I talk about a 5 to 10 year plan, it's about being proactive. So one of the things we've asked the firm that's done all this evaluation is when we're said and done, is now we need to identify what's a component project. What are the high dollar projects that are coming up in the next 3 to 5 years? And so then we can start that process of going to legislators and saying, hey, we need the funding. It goes through a committee. The committee looks at it, and then they'll go to legislation, and they'll approve a budget. So it's separate from major maintenance. So then we can use our major maintenance funds to actually do the things we need to do to make sure our buildings last anywhere from 60 to 70 years.
And one last question on this particular topic, and probably then we'll be wrapping up. You mentioned ESSER funds. What's that?
So those are our COVID funds. So anywhere from the governor's funds, the CARE funds, ESSER 1, ESSER 2, ESSER 3. The simplest way for Charles to wrap that up is those are COVID funds that have been provided by the federal government to the state and handed out to every district.
Okay.
And so that's what it is. And you know, I want to come back to the major maintenance. And I think that's a great question for the community to understand. They're saying, hey, we've already had a plan. Okay. Charles's plan is a little more detailed. You know, those plans that maybe were on that project, but I just feel we missed the boat with some of the things. You know, the HVAC project in KC, the building facilities, these all qualify for component projects. However, we are not on the list for anything like that, and those lists, getting put on that list to help support some of these big projects coming up will allow us to use our major maintenance funds a little bit more wisely.
I remember, you know, I was on the school board for quite a lot of years, and I remember people saying, "Oh, the superintendent, you know, why are you paying this person so much? What's the point of having, you know, what's the deal?" And I can just hear in your voice and your enthusiasm and your knowledge base, this is why we need a good superintendent, because there's so many details. And when things get missed, millions of dollars can be wasted. So thank you, Charles, for you know, picking up a lot of the loose ends that have been missed in the last few years.
I appreciate that, but Charles has a long ways to go, and he's growing too, and I really appreciate this opportunity to be in Johnson County, so thanks.
Is there anything else you want to touch on today before we close our interview for this week?
No, I think this is great. I just want to, I am so grateful for this opportunity every week, because this is what reaches the community. And I know the community is reaching it, because they'll come up to me and say, hey, I heard you on 307 Net, and then they'll ask a question. So this is doing what we needed to do and keep parents informed, because they're very busy. So
great.
Thank you.
Well, we want to bring, you know, the public information in your words, not edited, not filtered, you know, but we want people to hear it from you. So that's what we're doing. Anyway, we'll talk to you next week. This is Marcy Schuler signing off for 307 Net Radio. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.